Thank you, Ron. At this point, we would like to go ahead and have all three speakers answer questions as part of the roundtable. And so we have a list of questions that have been submitted. And so I will start with Sarah first. Sarah, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So first question is, Sarah, you mentioned the increase in consumption of comfort food, noting increased sales of things like Campbell's soup. Any indication on consumer demand change for fresh fruits and vegetables?
You know, I have seen some reports of increased demand for processed fruits and vegetables. So the fruits and vegetables that are canned or frozen, so the more shelf-stable items. And then, you know, another example that I presented on is the orange juice. So there's the spike in demand for orange juice. And then anecdotally in Hawaii, we've seen an increase in CSA participation and also purchases from food hubs or food distributors. I thought Colette had a lot of good information. And so, you know, perhaps Colette, do you have any insights on like demand changes for local produce?
We've heard that demand for local produce is high, and that's both in the direct markets, you know, expanded CSAs. We've had strong demand at farmers markets, but also we've heard, and I work with independent grocers and co-ops, and I've heard from them that those, what we call the periphery sales, which are the fresh and the meat and the dairy, that the demand is actually very high there, and that where we are seeing some of the shortages in terms of processed foods are in that central store area, so the packaged foods, and that we see some shortages coming. They anticipate shortages in the future as well as some of those supply chains into processing have been impacted, but peripheral sales are strong. We've also seen a lot of demand in the program, such as the Linkbox program in Spokane has been wildly successful.
Great, thank you. Sarah, what do you think might be the long-term implications to health from this higher food, comfort food consumption?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's unclear yet. So as people are choosing more of these comfort foods or eating more of the stress-relieving snacks, that could potentially have negative health impacts, and so it could be something interesting to look at from a research perspective. But also on the other hand, I think that it's unclear and there could be positive health benefits because as we see people are shifting to food at home and cooking more meals, that could potentially have positive health impacts. Because on average, food away from home is higher in calories, fat, and sodium than the food at home options.
You're right. That's a good point. I just want to remind our viewers today that you can also ask questions in the Q&A portion over on the left side of your screen. So feel free to add questions there. Thank you. Okay. I have another couple third questions for Colette. The first one is, Colette, you discussed farmers market changes such as using online ordering and some customers purchasing higher volumes. Do you have any projections on what might happen at the farmers market for 2021?
That's a really good question. Because the pandemic is still in full swing, I believe that we are going to still see very strong sales at farmers markets. One thing that we will see is that markets will most likely operate on time, because they've really got experience now on how to operate effectively in the pandemic, how to work with their growers for on-site sales, as well as these motor-in options. And we actually are in a lot of conversations here in Moscow. I serve on the Moscow Farmers Market Commission about whether or not the motor-in market model is something that should be a long-term addition to the farmers market. And it's interesting that that has really served producers, and it has not served craft vendors. So craft vendors, that's not been an effective way for them to sell. And we know from our research that the primary reason people come to farmers markets is for the agricultural products. That's always number one in all of the rapid market assessments and consumer surveys that we do. And the crafts add an important component, but they are dependent on those farm sales. So they believe if they have fewer people using the footprint in the market and more of an emphasis on the drive-through, that perhaps that's going to hurt them in the long run. So I think there's a lot of things that are unknown, but I do think for this next market season, we're going to see strong demand and we're going to see a continuation of programs like the Motor In or Order On Live drive-through pickup for farmers markets.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. The next question is, do you think winter markets will become more prevalent, especially for livestock and other value-added products post-COVID?
We have seen a growth in winter markets over the last 5 to 6 years. Unfortunately, now that we're in the second wave, that is negatively impacting the ability of our winter indoor markets to operate. So I do believe that we will see an increase in winter markets in the long term. Unfortunately, this year, I think their ability to operate is really going to depend on what the health district rules are and whether or not they have a safe operating environment indoors.
Okay. Do either of our two speakers have any comments on those questions directed at Colette or similar comments? Okay, the next question is for Ron. Ron, in the supply chain for international restaurants such as Yum Brands, are the food ingredients U.S. sourced and then transported internationally, or do foreign restaurants like KFC and China source food internationally?
The answer is yes and no. Typically, you know, if you go back and look in any restaurant, the products they serve, what makes them unique are the products they serve. They obviously have unique concepts and buildings and stuff like that, but people go back for the food. But in my experience, a lot of the times the foods are manufactured here and then shipped over, at least in the early entry. Now, with a lot of countries, you can't ship products in, so you are forced to make those products overseas. When I was with McDonald's, they were one of the first ones, and it was really difficult to find suppliers in Europe or Asia or any place else to make a lot of those products because they just weren't used to what was served in restaurants here. Mm-hmm. From an economic standpoint, the goal is to try to find suppliers that are within the country or at least the continents. The difficulty mm-hmm. is with a lot of these countries is trying to find suppliers that have the quality control and good manufacturing practices. And if you can't duplicate it, then you have to ship it in from someplace else. So you know, like Yum Brands, a lot of those products are made in Asia, same way in Europe today. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the stuff is still shipped from here, particularly the proprietary products.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember when I was doing research in China that McDonald's was bringing in all of their French fry and potato products because they weren't able to find quality suppliers of potatoes at
yes.
that point in China. But that was like, you know, early on, 2002, 2003, that type
yeah.
of thing.
And that's
okay,
the type of thing you have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next question, Ron, do you see Amazon Whole Foods as having a noticeable impact on the food at home or food away from home industries?
The you know, I don't have a measurement for that. I see it, you know, and people I talk to, same way with grocery stores and Walmart and some of the other things is, you know, in paper towels, canned goods and those types of things, that seems to be working. We don't seem or prior to pre-COVID, we haven't seen a lot of impact in terms of, yeah, I think the impact's been more on the retail, not necessarily on the restaurant side of the business. Mm-hmm. Because, again, each restaurant concept is unique, offers the product and the quality and the flavors that you want, and that's very difficult for a lot of those people to offer. Mm-hmm. I think with all of us being cooped up as long as we have and will continue to be, You know, you're gonna, you know, there's one thing that they can't offer, and that's the, you know, the family, the socializing, the restaurant experience, and going out and letting somebody else do it for you. So we haven't picked up a lot of concern about that at this point. It may happen in the future.
Mm-hmm. Colette or Sarah, do you guys have any information or any response to the Amazon Whole Foods situation?
No, I don't know. I don't have any perspective on that. Sorry.
Okay, just curious. Okay. Ron, final question. What do you see the impact of Beyond Meat and related products for producers?
Well, I don't, you know, everybody talks about it from a IPO or public perspective and all of that, and they've obviously made some inroads, but over the years we've seen, you know, one of the big issues around some of those products has been nutrition. And when you looked at least my evaluation of them is nutritionally, they're not as good as what we're seeing from animals.
Right.
I don't see big mixes on them out there. I think it will continue to be a trend. But the you know, one of the things that COVID has forced is a reduction in number of menu items that restaurants carry, particularly quick service restaurants, because of order accuracy, and just we're now trying to force more cars through the drive-through, and we're trying to speed up our production. So I think unless an item can maintain some kind of a substantial mix, I don't think it'll continue to be on the menu. Obviously, if more people put it on, it'll increase. But at this point, I don't see a lot of people very concerned about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I have seen it start to come up in research studies and ag economics professors lately across the board. I mean, both in the United States, Australia. So it'll be interesting to see how people view that in the long term.
It sure will. We've had a lot of concepts that have put their focus on health and wellness. Just about every one of them's gone out of business. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't necessarily walk the talk. Mm-hmm. So in terms of our eating habits. So, you know, there's going to be a part of the, you know, clientele that want it. But whether it'll be enough to sustain it or not, I'm not sure at this point.
All right. Well, thank you. I don't see any further questions in the Q&A box or in the those submitted. So I guess I will go ahead and greatly thank our speakers today, Sarah Raykamp, Colette DeFelds, and Rog Segnar. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You're
thank
welcome.
You for having fun today.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. If you would like to provide questions, you can put them into the chat window and provide feedback. Also, on the lower left-hand side of your screen, you can see a feedback. If you click on that, that will provide a web address to our webinar evaluation in the Browse To area below, and you can hit Browse To there. I would like to let everybody know that future Ag and Uncertain Time webinars will be happening in January and February, currently scheduled. In January, we'll have climate risk and tools for management. In early February, water outlook for ag in the West. And in late February, ag credit conditions in ag. So stay tuned for those and other details. Also, we are looking for feedback on the content that you would like to see in future webinars. And so please feel free to put those things in the Q&A chat box or to email information@farmmanagement.org. I'm going to leave that web address or that email address up there just a second. As mentioned earlier, the recordings and other information from this webinar will be available on the Ag and Uncertain Times website. If you're interested in a copy of any of today's presentations, they are also available to download. Just go ahead and point your browser at aguncertaintimes.farmmanagement.org and select the webinar tab. Let me close today by extending a sincere thank you to the speakers for their fabulous presentations. I also want to thank our Ag and Uncertain Times team and their sponsoring institutions for making this all possible. We would also like to thank the participants in today's webinar. We sincerely hope that you found this of valuable content and you can use in your position or in working with farmers and ranchers and or consumers. And for the entire Ag and Uncertain Times, this is Kendra Curtis, and thank you for joining us today. Have a pleasant afternoon and happy holidays.